Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the Thursday Night Throwdown. Sitting in the night, we got none other than Thanos down at the bottom, Duval Paul to my left, and of course me, the big guy KG, will be joined by the Midnight Rider later on tonight. Fellas, how y'all feeling tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good as can be. That's all I can say, as good as can be. Before we jump into it, get Duval Paul the floor and let him explain why he has his Florida State rain jacket on.
Oh yeah. So obviously the news is making the rounds. Mike Martin, former FSU baseball coach of 40 years, unfortunately passed away at the age of 79. He never won at all, but man, he touched a lot of great players. I made a little post about it earlier. JD Drew, Doug Mikhaevich, Paul Wilson, Deion Sanders, Buster Posey. Just a really, really great, great coach. As I've mentioned previously, I did go to FSU and saw a lot of great football, but I'm telling you, those baseball games, such a great experience. If you ever get to Tallahassee in the spring, highly recommend it. There's a fan base called the Animals of Section B that basically go to every game. Most loyal college baseball fans by a mile go to Omaha anytime that FSU makes it, and unfortunately have never been rewarded for their loyalty yet. Definitely going to miss Mike Martin. Great family of the FSU athletics program. He's a legend in FSU history. He came up with Dick Houser as an assistant coach. Just a deep history, and obviously he'll be missed. So pulled this one out of the closet. Just a pouring one out for Mike Martin, Fort Mosaic. We'll miss you, Mike. Godspeed. Rest in peace, bro.
And I rest in peace indeed. That's a sign of us getting older when you lose the good ones. I mean, you lose the coaches that you pretty much grew up with. When they start passing away, it's a sign of getting older.
I don't need no more signs of getting older, man.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
Well, we got a bit of news, and it's official. Starting this thing off right. It says DQ to DC. That's Dan Quinn to the District of Columbia by way of Landover. Initial thoughts right off the break. I'll start with Thanos, then we'll go to Duval Paul, and I'll finish it up.
I'm okay with it. I was really surprised how much on Twitter, even Grant Paulson was losing his mind because Ben Johnson wasn't coming to Washington. Nobody from Washington came out and said that he was their lock number one. They can spin it that Ben Johnson, wanted to go back to Detroit. But I think once Washington heard his demands, they were like, you know what? The guy hasn't proven anything. And Dan Quinn's kind of proven himself. Yeah, it fell off after Kyle Shanahan, but he still took him back to the playoffs. And the team was competitive. And his defenses, our defense was terrible last year. And I think he's the type of coach that will grow a culture where when you come into FedEx Field, when you leave, you're going to know that you got punched in the mouth. You may not win every game, but you're going to have a team that's going to compete. You're not going to have anybody like Chase Young stopping and letting the guy go and just run like four steps and stop.
Yeah. I'm not a Commanders fan. I lived in D.C. for a long period of time, so I do know many Washington fans, even down here in Duval. There's plenty of them here. So I do follow them kind of from an arm's length. Not having a dog in the fight, I'd say it's the last coaching vacancy filled, right? So it's probably not going to be the most overwhelming, oh, man, we feel like we nailed it type you know, coach. I felt like it was the safe move. I would have gone with Aaron Glenn. I feel like, you know, if you want greatness, sometimes you got to be willing to kind of, you know, put your nuts out there. And I felt like Dan was a safer move. I think that a lot of his success is going to depend on a couple of things. Who's he bringing in with him? He's got a lot of clout. Who's he bringing in with him? Who's going to be your OC is going to be the real question. I don't know. Does it, you know, I know we'll get to it later, but does he retain me? You know, different vision. What does he do with the quarterback? I saw something today that said Gardner is a free agent either to Washington or the Giants. And I'm like, well, I know how you feel about Sam Howell. So it doesn't matter what any of us feel about. It's what does the coach feel about Sam Howell? What does the new OC feel about Sam Howell? So you got a lot of dominoes that are going to fall, and that's going to probably dictate more of kind of what the success is. Now, what do I know about Dan Quinn? He was the head coach in Atlanta. I mean, outside of that one Dirty Bird season, Atlanta is not, you know, even with Michael Vick for all those years, like Atlanta never really made it to that next level with any coach that they had. But I don't know what the problems were when he was head coach there. But I think that you guys have a lot of draft capital. I think you've got a lot of cap space, and the cap number's probably going to go up even more. And there's going to be a lot of good players out there. So it's what do you need? Obviously, you guys gave up Chase Young, and I saw you made a post recently about him maybe taking some plays off. So maybe it's addition from subtraction or by subtraction. But Dan Quinn, he's got that, you know, early on, especially he had that defense humming. If you can hold teams from scoring in your division, which is, you know, people say that, the old Chicago, Green Bay, Detroit, Minnesota, like that's the black and blue. I think the NFC East is, they beat the shit out of each other every season. It doesn't make a difference. So you need a coach that can play defense, that can hold teams in check. And I think, having been a fan of a team that's not, you know, seen a ton of success, when you do have those moments, and it's not like Washington's not holding three Lombardis, I think you guys are, you know, have reason for optimism. But I think it's, again, going to fall on what do you feel about, what does the coach feel about the quarterback? You know, what are you, you know, bringing in as far as an OC and a DC? And, you know, how good you feel about your GM?
And the midnight rider chimed in. I have to do this. It's Thursday. I have to do it like he does it. It's the night of the week that everybody waits for. Thursday night throwdown. Yeah. He does it better than me. So he does it way better. But he also says Matt Ryan and Julio Jones battle injuries post Super Bowl run. They were 28-3. That was a hangover. I think that they're still hungover from that. And most of those players ain't even there no more. I said this last night. I said it when the news came. I said I'm on the fence because defensive-minded coach, leader of men. I mean, everything you describe about Dan Quinn, it's Ron Rivera looking in the mirror. But Ross brought up a great point. He doesn't have to deal with what Ron Rivera had to deal with the personnel decision. And maybe that's what Ron needed to do. Maybe he needed to give up the personnel and let somebody else run it. But one thing I can guarantee, under Dan Quinn, we're going to have a dominant defense. He did it in Seattle with the Legion of Boom. They won a Super Bowl. Went to two Super Bowls, won one. Atlanta's defense with, what was his name, Grady Jarrett and all those guys was pretty good. Yep. He took a bottom dweller Dallas defense and turned it into a number one defense. I mean, even though you had the biggest problem in the league, and that's the Micah Parsons problem, but he got so much out of that defense, it was scary. Now, we have these weapons. You got Allen, you got Payne, you got Davis. I mean, I'm just naming guys. But I think we should be able to get at least the top three defense out of this. But now on the offensive side, what do you do? Who do you go with? Do you draft the quarterback? First and foremost, before you think about any of that, start figuring out what kind of offensive line you're going to put together so whatever quarterback you pick is standing upright to deliver the ball.
Yeah.
But now, do you pick a quarterback with the number two overall pick? Do you stay with Howell and nurture him? But do you bring in another OC?
Do you trade down for a bounty of picks?
That too, because I'm sure. I think they're sitting on 13.
They got 13 picks, but I mean, you want to hit those impact players. If you can get somebody's first next year, and you only have to slide down two picks, and you weren't even going after that, and guess what? You still plug in a guy that's at the four spot. Somebody you feel pretty good about. No, man.
Yeah.
Is Jonathan Allen staying? Is that his story? I don't know what his contract situation is.
Yeah, he just re-upped. What was that, last year? He re-upped, but his attitude, his contract says yes, but his attitude says I'm ready to get the hell out of town. Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if he got moved, like a draft night trade or something like that.
We'll take him.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll take Josh Allen, and you can send him on up here.
We got a reason. Well, he's a free agent, technically.
Right,
If our GM's stupid enough to let him go, but you know what?
They're going to franchise
him. We didn't know. If we franchise him, that's such a bad faith move.
That's what he had said in an interview. Josh Allen says he thinks he's getting a franchise tag.
That's a bad faith move.
I would like to see him in burgundy and gold.
Mm-hmm. Bad faith move. Mm-hmm. If Jacksonville does that, they deserve it. You know what? Jalen Ramsey didn't deserve it with his attitude. I think he was a little, I'm an FSU guy. Don't get me wrong. I like, Jalen Ramsey, but his attitude towards the end, I think he was just like, you know what, if I'm going to play for this team, I just want to get paid. And he went to LA, he got paid, he's got his ring. So I guess he got what he wants. I guess he's happy. But his whole thing was, back the Brinks truck up. He had that whole thing where he actually paid the Brinks truck to come up to the stadium, and he came out, and that's how he came out to training camp. So, Josh Allen, I would back the Brinks truck up for him. He's in his prime. He's a great guy. Like, was mentored by Calais Campbell his rookie year. Does everything the right way. Great in the community. Mentoring Trayvon Walker. Like, when they did that, the charity they do where everybody wears the cleats for their charity. He did his for Trayvon Walker's, and Trayvon didn't even know. He's like, what? He's like, yeah. He's like, I don't even have my own charity, but you got one. I'm going to support you because you're doing it. And you're because it's you, and I'm supporting you. I'm like, you want him. You want that guy in the locker room. We don't pay him. We're stupid.
Yeah. But we're stupid. Need guys like that in the locker room.
You do.
We don't have too many of them here.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of Terry, who do we have here?
Right. We have Terry. That's it. Maybe Tressway.
Tressway. I
mean, he's the punter. So, that.
How much sway does he carry?
Right.
But I mean, it's a lot. But I mean, really, you gotta ask that. The Midnight Rider says Allen doesn't have any guarantees left on the deal.
So maybe you get his mind right and you redo his contract. So he's feeling like, hey, I'm an integral part of this defense. You still got to replace Montez Sweat. I mean,
yeah,
that's the one that hurt was Montez Sweat.
So I'm with you on that.
So, I mean, how Dan Quinn finds these guys. But again, like you said, Dan Quinn's got a reputation. He's got a resume, and his resume is kind of nasty. So defensive guys, if you're a free agent, the scheme, the reputation. Maybe you get one or two guys that way. But I mean, like I said, man, you guys hit on your free agents, you hit on your draft, and maybe you trade down and within 2 years, you guys are really talking about running the division. Who knows? But again, it's all that domino effect. Who are you bringing in as your OC or DC? Who are they bringing in to round out the staff? It's late in the game. So a lot of guys have been hired. So that's the disadvantage that you got.
Now, two things. I would love to say, hey, we run the division, but I don't want to run the division for one season. I want to run the division for five seasons. And if we have an offseason, let's have an offseason and come back and run it for another five. These runs where we blow out the division 1 year and the next year we can't bust a grape. I don't want to go through that again. That's what I don't want. No.
I got news for you. Like, cry me a river. You got three rings. Yeah. You know, I got none.
Right.
You know, and they're all different coaches, different quarterbacks. So you've never done it the conventional way. So every season for you could be the winning lottery ticket. That's the way you got to look at it. This could be the year. Because you know what? For you, it's worked three times. If yeah. I'm optimistic, I'm like just another fool, like, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid. But you guys
That's because of the way those teams were constructed. They retooled every year.
Right.
That was a whole retool.
Right. They didn't do an overhaul, but they brought in key guys. Gerald Riggs came in just to carry the ball on the goal line. And you had Clint Didier. They brought in a name, Craig McEwen from San Diego. He was the H-back. They brought in just like maybe one or two guys, and they contributed. And they contributed. We want a team that's competitive. Jacksonville has started to build. Yeah, they don't have any Super Bowl rings, but those guys are building something. They haven't built anything here. It's been a sack of shit for years. And you want a team that's competitive. Like KG was saying, you want to play games that are important. I don't want to, at the middle of October, end of October, go, oh, this season's done, and I'm just watching the string out.
Yeah.
I want them to be competitive. If you play, and you know what, it goes down to the last game and you lose, okay, I can accept that. You're going to lose sometimes, but you want to be competitive. We were competitive last year on both sides of the ball. When you have guys that are just stop chasing people and you can't tackle, and you just can't. And year after year, I'm going to stop because I could go on forever because it's frustrating.
This is where you have that clean slate moment then.
Right.
Because you're like, even if
everything got douched out, it's gone. Yeah.
There you go. It's the Thursday night Madison Gill moment.
Right. There you go.
But you know, it's a clean slate. So you know what? You've got reason for optimism because you don't have any evidence that's going to say, what are you doing, dude? Why would you do that? You know, like I knew, like case in point, I knew I was one of the minority that knew Urban Meyer when he got hired to Jacksonville. I'm like, this is the stupidest, worst idea ever. I have people trying to convince me. I'm like, no, this is not even going to work. I applaud Shad Khan, who is notorious for keeping bad people in their positions for years. Gus Bradley, I think he won like two games, five games, three games, four games, or something like that. That was his 4 year. Like, what are you doing, dude? 16-game season. You're going to do that to your fans for four full seasons? And then you let the guy just, like, you know, play his contract out. You can't do that. If somebody's a cancer, you got to get him out. And, you know, Ron was beloved in the community. I know, KG, you loved him. So, you know, as an outsider, he didn't have that same command he had in Carolina. I don't want to say he's lost a little bit off his fastball, but that's what it kind of seemed like.
I can agree with that.
KG and I were talking about that last night. It seemed like after his cancer and his treatment, and after his mom passed, he wasn't the same guy. And obviously that takes a lot out of you. But I think there was a lot going on with what he had to do. Like he couldn't concentrate, even though towards the end he said, hey, you know, I really miss coaching and doing this. Even though the defense was still terrible, I just don't think he got a chance to and if he sits back and reflects on everything, he'll be like, yeah, that was a mistake. I should have just been the coach and let somebody else be the GM.
So who do you guys have now as the GM or calling the shots for your draft?
Adam Peters.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And Martin Mayhew's still here. Keep Martin. Yeah, I think
I'd take either of them over Trent Baalke. Heartbeat. Yeah. Don't even get me started.
Because if I'm not mistaken, Mayhew's down at the Senior Bowl as well, I think.
Yeah. They flew down together.
Mm.
So, but you didn't hear Marty Herney down there.
Well, are you guys coaching in it with the number two pick?
I don't think so.
You're not one of the two teams that would choose to coach? Isn't that what it is? Well, I guess you didn't have a head coach. You couldn't.
Yeah. Right.
But now Dan Quinn is down there, but I don't know if he's coaching per se.
No, right. But I don't know if he's talking.
I don't know if he down there scouting or what.
He's eyeballing. He's eyeballing is what he's doing.
He's down there shaking hands and kissing babies. Yeah. He's
Now, we talked about his, you know, who you bring in. Some news that came out a couple of hours ago, they say quite possibly the Commanders are expected to hire Cowboys defensive pass game coordinator Joe Witt Jr. as the DC. So I'm not sure too much about Joe Witt and his philosophy. Let me see. He was a graduate assistant of receivers at Auburn, wide receivers coach at the Citadel, cornerbacks coach and recruiting coordinator at Louisville, assistant DB coach with the Falcons, defensive quality control coach in Green Bay, as well as the cornerbacks coach, defensive passing game coordinator with Green Bay as well. Went to Cleveland.
That's where I remember the name from, Green Bay.
Okay. Went to Cleveland, secondary coach and pass game coordinator. He had the same position in Atlanta and the same position with Dallas.
I like the fact that he's been on both sides of the ball. Like Bobby, yeah. So I like that because that gives you an insight into the offense. One of the guys that I was kind of rooting for that would get more play was Anthony Weaver from Baltimore. I was really hoping, that maybe they would take a shot on him and bring him in because he's the assistant head coach. And for Harbaugh to do that, he's got to have something. He can't be a nobody or a nothing. So, you know, and he's a Notre Dame guy. So, you know.
You know, I love that. Right. The Midnight Rider says, calm down, fellas. Martin Mayhew will be here through the draft and may have a role. Well,
yeah.
Spitballing.
Him and Peters are out hanging.
Here's a question. Now, if Joe Witt is going to be your defensive coordinator, I'm going to throw some names out for OC. You guys tell me yes or no. Cam Cameron.
What has he done recently?
I'm not a Cam Cameron fan at all.
Yeah.
I think the last job he had was Baltimore.
Yeah. I'm not.
What are you doing? Like, what cell did you pull Cam Cameron out of? I mean, how old is Cam Cameron right now?
He's 62. He's a young boy.
Didn't Cam Cameron draft Ted Ginn Jr.? Like, right. How old is Cam Cameron?
Oh my goodness.
He a young buck. He ain't number 62.
Oh Lord.
He had thrown Marty Schottenheimer out there next.
Oh man. Hey, he was still there's a gleam, man. There's a gleam.
Yeah. I don't know. Cam Cameron threw me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing out names.
Clint Kubiak. That's the name I heard.
Yeah.
I've heard him quite often.
Yeah.
If possible, this go round, if he decides to take a coordinator position, Jim Caldwell.
I like Jim Caldwell.
Yeah.
I think he's I hate to say it. I mean, but we played him in the division, so I obviously had to follow the damn Colts. But he knows how to throw the damn ball. I know that. If you got the right personnel, he knows how to throw the ball. He knows how to balance an offense. He's seen a lot of shit. I know he's not sexy, but he's wise. He's smart. You could do a lot worse.
Yeah, I don't mind Jim Caldwell.
Is the Washington community off of Bieniemy? Is that?
I don't know if it's so much off of Bieniemy, but after. I'm going to say after what he did, after the way the offense was run last year, like the running backs getting no play and just throwing the ball out of the shotgun, never putting him under center. And just the way that it was called, I was so hyped when he was coming to Washington. I'm just like, we're going to have an offense. It's going to be great. And the more I watched, I'm going, what is going on?
But isn't that kind of how KC's offense has been running?
But KC's offense, they ran the ball. If you look, like, I mean, they ran the ball. They used the tight end. This offense never used the tight end. I don't care who was there. Cole Turner never saw the field. And Logan Thomas, I'm hoping they cut him. I really do, because he's done. I want to see Cole Turner or draft a tight end. But
you need a tight end in this league, period. Yeah. You need one. Jacksonville was a completely different offense once we got Evan Engram and got him out of his funk. And we resigned him because that's one something we did that was right for once.
On the defense, I wanted to say, when the defense takes the field, you'll see all three linebackers on the field. You won't see no damn defense with two linebackers on the field like we ran almost all year and just getting blown off the ball. When teams wanted to run up the middle, they'd run up the middle. It's going to be different, but yeah, I'm not opposed to Jim Caldwell. I mean, we could do a lot worse than him.
What about if he pulled up somebody from the college ranks, if there's somebody you could lure? Brian Greasy.
Yeah, that's what Midnight Rider said. He says Brian Greasy.
Brian Greasy, because he apparently has had a lot of input and was the one that kind of was talking about Purdy when all the draft stuff was going on, and he's helped him. So
I think if there's enough smoke around Clint Kubiak, because that's the other name that I had heard as well.
Yep.
Then I mean, it's not a bad pick. But again, what do these people feel about Sam Howell? What do you feel about the rest of the roster? What's the philosophy that you want to be? You know, you guys are talking about getting that identity. Who's going to be the dogs that you get on defense to fulfill what Dan Quinn's looking for?
And you know, one thing he's going to go is for a dominant pass rusher. Somebody that can really impact the ball game. So I expect us to go out and get somebody. Von Miller, it's going to be the Von Miller about 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
Dominant. Not this Von Miller now. This is, you know, that was Harris Teeter Von Miller back then. This is great value Von Miller now. Nah, this ain't even great value. This is what you get from the A&P. Yeah. Take it all the way back.
Oh, that's wow! A&P, God.
A&P. I mean, the dude had what, 5 tackles all year, no sacks.
Yeah.
And your job is to come in and get tackles and sacks. That's all your job is. Here's another name for you. This is old school. I know the Midnight Rider is going to flip his. You know what?
He'll say, "What are you doing here? What are we doing?"
You know what he's gonna say. Somebody that was in the franchise once before.
Albert Hainsworth.
No. I don't want that guy back in DC. Oh. No. I damn sure don't want him back. Mike Martz.
Again, like, I feel like you're going to, like, the back of your grandmother's cupboard to, like, you know, looking behind the cereal and you're pulling these coaches out. Cam Cameron, Mike Martz. Like the greatest show on turf. Like,
what? Yeah.
Hey.
All right.
I mean, but see, my philosophy with somebody like Sam Howell,
and I see in the coaching world. That's his name.
It is. It has become that. But now my philosophy and with this coaching staff, everybody thinks I'm crazy when I say it, but numbers don't lie. With Sam Howell, if you get him a quarterback coach that's really into teaching, he'll be a better quarterback. And I said, hey, take $10,000, $12,000. Call Jim Zorn. Let Jim Zorn have him for 3 weeks. I guarantee you, him holding the ball too long, him standing in the pocket, taking them sacks, it'll go down. It'll probably be cut in half. I seen what he did for Flacco. I seen what he did for Campbell. I seen what he did for Hasselbeck. He's done it. Every quarterback that he's coached, they've had their best season under him because he knows the quarterback position.
Yep.
But people say, oh, you crazy, man. Ain't nobody going out for him. I say, yeah, if you're smart, you're going to go out for him. Because one thing Jim Zorn does know, he knows the game. He can't coach it, but he knows the game.
Right. Swinging gate.
Yeah. That proved that he can't coach. And here you go.
You guys have a lot of cap space, right?
I think it went down to $75 million, but it may go back up.
That's like number one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of cap space. So here's the deal. You lost Montez Sweat. You lost Chase Young. I'm looking at just the draft prospects of next year. You know, if you want a young defensive guy in the draft, you're either trading down or you're going to try to grab a guy later in the draft. But as far as defensive edge free agents that are there, I'll just give you some names. You tell me, would you take them? Danielle Hunter.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd take him in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Carl Lawson.
Yeah, I mean, all of them are better than guys we got.
Randy Gregory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marcus Davenport.
Most definitely. Yeah. I wanted him out of the draft back in 18.
18, yep.
Leonard Williams. Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to even say Josh Allen because that's just crazy.
Well, I would drive down and get him.
I know KG likes him old, so I'll just say, Calais Campbell at 37 years old.
No, I wanted Calais Campbell like 7-8 years ago when he was leaving, when he left y'all and they got him in Baltimore. That's when I needed him. What
about Brandon Graham pushing 36?
Yep.
Nah. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
The Midnight Rider chimed in. He said KG shopping it for coordinators at the local old folks home. Man, I'm just naming names. And of course, he said, yes, Thanos, what are we doing here? We're picking coordinators. What do you mean? What are we doing here? We're picking coordinators. Who's next, Ted Marchibroda? No, Marchibroda, God rest his soul. If Ted was still living, He couldn't do anything outside of Baltimore.
Yep.
He is beloved in Baltimore to this day by old Colts fans because of how great of a coach he was there. So he couldn't do anything outside of Baltimore. So that you got to leave Ted in Baltimore.
What? Not, I don't want this guy, but what about Frank Wright?
Frank Wright is not a bad thing. Him as an OC.
Yeah.
It's not a bad choice.
I was thinking about it.
Here's the deal. It doesn't have to be sexy.
No.
It just has to be right.
Yeah, that's the same thing with like Quinn and like the people that he's going to bring in, because there's not all these big name people that are left out there. You don't have Dan Quinn's not a sexy pick, but I bet you he works.
But here's the advantage of it. And even though I said I would prefer an Aaron Glenn, here's the advantage of a Dan Quinn over an Aaron Glenn in this scenario, because you're the last coaching hire. I think that there's going to be people that are going to be more willing to go with a guy who's got the track record of being a head coach and an established defensive coordinator versus Aaron Glenn. Maybe some people wouldn't want to put their neck out there as much for, rolling the dice. Hey, give me a 2-year deal and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So I think there are some things that are planned. I mean, like I said, man, it doesn't have to be sexy. It just has to be right.
I had heard when like Dan Quinn, now, of course, it comes out that says that he was like their, they were really taken by him, that he'd come in with a plan and he had named like, this is who I want to get as my offensive coordinator. Now, they didn't give out any names or anything, but he had a plan where this would be my quarterback's coach. And that way, if the offensive coordinator gets.
He probably has some guys that he's tapped. I mean, wasn't he part of the group that did he come with the whole group that went to Dallas with McCarthy, where they like had a whole group of former coaches that were like all out of work, that all were like just sitting watching all the games and game planning for different teams and scheming before they all formed that Voltron force down there in Dallas.
I don't know if he was part of the group. I don't know.
But I mean, but he's, like I said, I mean, he's an established coach.
He's got a good track. He's got relationships. He knows people. I mean, he's been around. He knows people. He's been around. And he knows what's at stake. And they said that he really wanted this job. He really wanted this job. So I'm kind of glad. I was never wanting Ben Johnson in the first place. And the fact that everybody was just like, oh, I can't. What difference does it make? It doesn't matter if we're the last team to hire a coach. If he comes in here, it's not like we're getting – we still had good choices, whether it got Aaron Glenn, Anthony Weaver, even if they'd interviewed Mike Vrabel. There was a report that they had said they spoke to Bill Belichick. Not anything serious, but just spoke to him. I don't care, because in years past, Bill Belichick would have been our coach because he was the high name, and they would have brought him in here, and – it would have been 5 more years of bad luck. You know, he's a good coach, but I don't know. It's like his coaching tree isn't strong at all.
All right. So I just pulled them up. So the reason why he probably, and this is just me having no education at all on the man whatsoever, just a stab in the dark. He's from New Jersey. He grew up in Morristown, New Jersey. But his early coaching career was at William & Mary and at VMI. So maybe he's got some ties just to the, you know, to the area, or at least, you know, being in Washington, it's a lot closer for people that he's got close to him. So I know that nothing is close to Seattle. No. So I'm sure, you know, just the mental health of having a good support system that's close to you, maybe that's another, you know, point in the right direction for you. I mean, I'm rooting for Washington, certainly over Dallas. I'll never, ever root for Dallas. And I think that the NFL's, you know, honestly better when Washington's good. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Now, here's a question. We're talking about coordinators. Now, Eric Bieniemy came in last year. He signed a 2-year deal. I thought it was a 5-year deal. He signed a 2-year deal. So that means he has 1 year left on his deal. Do you see them keeping him? And by some stroke of genius, they just say, okay, let's see if you can improve on last year, but we're going to put people around you that are different, but we want this offense to stay in the same type of offense. Because the worst thing you can do to a quarterback, we talk about it all the time here.
Yep.
You can't Jason Campbell a quarterback. Yep. They're never going to be any good. 5 years, 4 different coordinators. He never been able to settle in the system. You're never going to get the full potential of that quarterback. So, question to you, gentlemen. Do you keep EB just to keep some sort of continuity on offense if you're going to go with Sam Howell? If you're going to go with Sam Howell.
I don't know. EB kind of broke my heart with the way that he called the games and everything last year. The last 8 games watching Sam Howell, I don't know. I'm just speaking as a dumb old guy sitting on a couch. How can you go in and say, that's my quarterback, when you see Jaden Daniels, who I want in the draft, not May from North Carolina. But not saying that Howell can't be a quarterback, can't be a starting quarterback in the NFL, but – we saw him get progressively worse as the year went on, and he looked lost by the end of the year. While he showed great promise at the beginning of the year, the offensive play calling and the offensive line had something to do with, but he was making the wrong decisions. He was holding the ball too long, and then he was just making the wrong decisions, the wrong reads. They were able to fool him. So I don't know how you can look at him and go, that's our guy. But who knows? Stranger things have happened.
So if that's the case, do you look at maybe bringing in a Gardner Minshew or someone else? I'm not sure who else is out there as far as
Jacoby Brissett.
I mean, I think I mean, certainly they're there, but I mean, at least Gardner Minshew this year showed he won more. I mean, he went to the Pro Bowl. Yep. He won more games than any, and this is the year that every backup quarterback got in the game, you know, every one of them. Even Trevor Lawrence, you know, for the first time in his career, missed a game ever. And he won more games as a backup quarterback than anybody, like, ever in the history of the league.
And he performs when he comes in. I mean, not 100%, but most of the time.
And I mean, as somebody who knows Gardner Minshew, who's met Gardner Minshew, I love him as a quarterback. He's got his limitations, but if you give him a good supporting cast, he'll make the right play, or he'll at least play within himself to give you guys a chance to steal a win, get that big kick to win the game, whatever it is. I mean, he's been around the block. He's a different cat for sure. Takes the offseason, lives in a friggin' RV, and like works out. Even when he's by himself, like literally goes through the entire game by himself, like the entire game. He'll, you know, that's how he trains. That's how his mind is. He's a maniac. He wants to be the guy. You can get a guy like that. You can get a guy like that. Maybe you don't break the bank at that position. You can throw a bunch of money at some of these defensive players that are going to be out there.
Josh Allen. You know?
That'll get you at least a quick fix. Why you develop the guys. And that's what the Washington teams of Super Bowl history have done, is they've had some established guys, and then they've had some young guns that were mentored the right way. I think, you know, the greatest gift to the entire fan base is that Dan Snyder's no longer there. So you're still kind of washing decades of that taste out of your mouth and trying to get used to the new guy. And you know how that's going. I'm not as close to it. I don't know what the fans feel about their confidence in the owner, but you take it from there, and you know, you hope for the best, and you hope that, you know, Dan Quinn makes the right call.
Yeah.
Now, over on IG, another name that came up, and I appreciate this from I Am Bay, my man Brian, brother. He said Greg Roman as OC. Now, I was being funny with a lot of the names, but I mean, great names, but I was being funny. But Greg Roman, I think I like that.
Yeah.
Could do worse.
He likes to run the ball.
Yes.
So here we go. Here's my completely drive everybody in the entire football world crazy scenario for Eric Bieniemy. You ready for it? Here we go. Kansas City goes out, beat San Francisco, wins the Super Bowl. Andy Reid retires. The Chiefs hire Eric Bieniemy, and he has an opportunity to run it back with a team that knows him, that he knows, with players that he's coached that know his system and know his scheme. And he has an opportunity to tell all those owners the last couple of rounds, y'all fucked up. So I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. It's just something that happened that kind of crossed my mind.
You should be able to bet that in Vegas.
Yeah.
I'm sure Vegas would take my money on it. I'm positive they would. I've seen enough of the Midnight Riders, you know, chits to know they'd take that money.
Damn, he has had a rough go of it lately.
I feel bad for him. I really do.
Oh yeah.
This might make the question null and void. They say UCLA, this is on ESPN, UCLA head coach Chip Kelly is a potential candidate for Commanders OC under new head coach Dan Quinn. What about Chip Kelly?
He can run an offense. And if they do that, are they who was the coach? I can't think of the coach. Jaden Daniels. Does that mean maybe they'll bring in Jaden Daniels because he runs that type of offense? I don't know.
That would not be my move. I would not feel confident in that, because I remember what he did when he came in. He took the bag. And what did he do in Philly?
He shit
the bed. And then he took the bags. Where else did he go? He went somewhere else.
San Francisco.
San Francisco. Yeah. And what did he do?
Shit the bed.
On the West Coast,
You took a Super Bowl coach in college. Team.
He's a great coach in college. He's a name that you know, because how many chips do you fucking know? And, you know, it works. That high-tempo offense works in the college game. Guess what? The NFL is all the cream of the crop of those guys that you were able to whoop with that little scheme and system. And they're bigger, nastier, and they're doing it for money. So, you know, I guess they're doing it for money in college now, but they're doing it for more money in the NFL. So, I wouldn't feel great about Chip Kelly, but at least he's got some NFL experience. I don't know what his offenses did, but I mean, I think he's one of those coaches that can get too cute for their own good in the NFL. Yeah.
Agreed.
That's a good point.
Now, see, with Chip Kelly, 2016 is when he had San Francisco. Now, that team, what did they finish? I'm looking that up. That team finished 2-14, right? They had a roster. That was the year that, if I'm not mistaken, Kaepernick got benched for Blaine Gabbert because they changed. Yep. Tom Sula had changed the whole offense the year before. Now, mind you, they had just went two NFC championship games back-to-back. Harbaugh retires after the Super Bowl. Well, he leaves after the Super Bowl loss. Tom Sula comes in. They play like garbage because they're not doing anything they were doing.
You are just trying to bait me with the common denominator of Trent Baalke in this scenario. Because Trent Baalke was the nasty-ass chef who made that meal. So you're forcing me to defend Chip Kelly because he was saddled with that shitty ass roster.
Well, I mean, Raheem Mostert. I mean, it wasn't really much on there, but you had something. And Chip Kelly came in and he changed so much in San Francisco, but he did the same thing in Philly. Because if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he the guy that got rid of Nick Foles the first time?
Yeah.
In favor of Sam Bradford.
Threw Nick Foles away.
He got rid of LeSean McCoy, didn't he?
Yeah.
He got rid of Jamie.
Yeah.
That was
crazy.
What are you doing, dude? It's like, do you even fantasy, bro?
Right.
Not even a little stupid.
So, yeah,
The Midnight Rider says Matt Nagy is the heir in KC. If Matt Nagy gets another head coaching job and he gets it in KC, he'll shit the bed too.
Yep.
He's not a good head coach, but just my opinion.
Chicago's another one of them teams that ain't done it since the 80s.
Well, they did have that run.
Well, they did have the Super Bowl with Lovey. I shouldn't.
But it was a run that they had run before that, where they just kept winning late games. They kept winning games late. Mike Brown wound up in the end zone. If it came down to last play of the game, either in overtime or to stave off overtime, and they needed a touchdown, Mike Brown wound up with the ball and ended up in the end zone for like 25 games in a season. Because that's what it seemed like every time they were down, here Mike Brown come with a fumble recovery or pick, and he walking in the end zone to win the game.
Yeah.
Switching gears. We talked about it on Tuesday. The names of the investors are coming out, but the Orioles are going to be sold for $1.7 billion. Cal Ripken is a part of the investment group as well as Grant Hill. What do you gentlemen think about that?
I like that. One, I think it'll help the Nats maybe kickstart the sale. And I don't know if Uncle Ted will be the one that buys the Nats, but if they sell, when they sell the team, they'll get the TV money that they've wanted. And that's really the big holdback to the sale. Because at this point, nobody's even talked about the sale. The Learners aren't spending any money. We're signing Joey Gallo, who I've had more hits last year than he did. He just So it helps in two ways. The Orioles were smart. The Angelos were smart. Orioles had their best year. Let's sell the team while they're at their highest point in the last 20 years. Let's sell them. And Cal Ripken is part of the investment. I think that's the way it should be. Cal Ripken is a legend. Not an Orioles fan. I'm a Yankees fan. I'm a Nats fan. But he's a legend, and that I love seeing that. I love seeing that. It'd be like Derek Jeter if he went into an invest with the Yankees. So I'm for it. I'm hoping it helps the Nats. I mean, I could care less about Baltimore if they never won another game. It wouldn't bother me. But the Nats, I think it's going to help the Nats.
Yeah, I think when the announcement came out, the initial response, I think there was some trepidation that people had because who were the owners? Did they understand the community? Did they understand how beloved the O's are to the fan base and the city, the stadium, the whole experience of going to Camden Yards? Do they know the history? Or are they just looking at it as a cash investment? And right. I think that early reports were that I guess some of the members of the group are kind of more those people like, yeah, we got a bunch of money and we just want to dump it in. But obviously Cal Ripken is Hall of Fame, class act. Doesn't he own a minor league team in Maryland as well?
Yeah.
You know, he's connected to the community, connected to Major League Baseball in a very intimate way. That's a very unique way. Grant Hill, didn't he grow up in Maryland as well?
Yeah.
Just speak so, Virginia.
Yeah.
Oh, Virginia. So, I mean, mm-hmm. but he grew up in, obviously went from.
Well, in the D.C. area as well, because I think he was born around the time that his dad was playing with the Redskins.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got people who understand the D.C., Baltimore region and understand the connection, certainly the connection from sports to the community. That's gotta be a positive for those fans who were maybe a little bit nervous that, hey, whatever this group does, they're going to be at least steering things towards the right direction as far as preserving the history and of Camden Yards. And I mean, it's a church. I mean, my wife, God bless my wife, I love her to death. She doesn't really appreciate sports to the degree that I do. Her first and only Major League Baseball that I took her to was Camden Yards. And she was like, oh, I can finally get this. Just because, it's such an iconic place to go see a game. I mean, we'd seen minor league ball games and whatever. But, yeah, I mean, Camden Yards is a special place. The Orioles are a special team. And if you finally have an ownership group that's got the pockets to dump money, because that's what this game is becoming. In Major League Baseball, I mean, shit, what the Dodgers are doing. You know, it's like you got to have some deep ass pockets or you're just not going to compete. You're going to be San Diego every year.
Yep.
I guess the arrow's pointing up. If it needed to be done, it needed to be done. And hopefully, things are on the upswing. And to your point, I think there is absolutely a ripple effect to Washington, which is just down the street. Does the premonition you guys are kind of throwing out there come to fruition? We'll see.
And I'm just like Thanos there. I'm a Yankee fan, but I love to see the Nats win because they're in a different league, so I can watch them and be proud. But the problem is it's so hard to watch them. And I hope this sale rectifies this TV deal so they can make the money that they need because the Nats not being able to pay players because they don't have the money. And I hope the Nats get sold as well.
Yeah.
You got to have, when you play in baseball, when you're owning a baseball team, it's like playing chess, but you got to have some money to play chess.
Yeah.
This ain't playing chess in the park. This playing chess in the tournament. And I hope it works out to where both teams in the area, they prosper all the way around the board. Because when you win ball games, you bring in more money because not only are you bringing in, you getting the eyes on the team on TV, you're getting the seats, the butts in the seats.
Yep.
Imagine having 81 sellouts at National Stadium and Oriole Park. You got every game sold out. Be great.
Especially when you're charging like $15 a beer and $17 a hot dog.
Well, yeah.
See, people going to pay it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you win it, that those prices don't matter. Nope. The food can be terrible, but if you win it, doesn't matter. Last but not least, we got players crying about playing 65 games because that's how you have to qualify for any award. My question to you, gentlemen, do the players have a legit gripe about having to play 65 games?
No, they don't have a legit gripe. I'm so tired of hearing, like, you and I talked about Anthony Rendon the other night. I'm tired of, and it's not every NBA player, but I'm just tired of these guys making all this money, and they earned it, but you're playing a game. And you basically, I mean, they changed the rules now, but you can sit out, like, well, an injury like Fultz, who sits out and says, oh, well, you know, for his knee or whatever they're calling it, but he sits out every other game for his knee. I don't know. I mean, it used to be it's 82 games or whatever it was or whatever it was before. It's 65 games. They're playing less. They're getting paid the same money. What if they took the money? Okay, well, you're only playing 65 games, so we're going to do scale, and we're going to scale the money back to 65 games. Are you good with that? None of them would be good with that.
See, you might have to educate me a little bit on this rule, because is it that you have to play 65 games in order to be eligible for a postseason award?
Yeah. Any award, Sixth Man of the Year, MVP, Rookie of the Year, you got to play at least 65 games.
Is this really a conversation? Like, I mean, if you wanna be the MVP, shouldn't you be playing? If you want to be the Rookie of the Year, like, what, you're gonna play 30 games and then, you know, I'm out? I don't know. This seems silly. Like, who's griping about this? What are they saying? Like, I'm curious to hear, like, the sound bites of the people who are griping, because that'll probably help me to shape an opinion a little bit more. For the purposes of this conversation.
Of all people, Jamal Crawford. Now, granted, don't get me wrong. I'm a big Jamal Crawford fan. I was a fan of his, and with the Bulls, the Knicks, the Clippers, wherever he was at, I was a big Jamal Crawford fan. Only thing I don't agree with is when people run around calling him the greatest sixth man alive, and he should be in the Hall. No, you shouldn't. Him, Lou Williams. No, y'all not the greatest six man. If your name is not Hondo, you're not touching Hondo. Okay? So kill that noise. But he's saying that they have a point. What is it? What did he say? His clip was
hang on, I just pulled them up because I'm not the biggest. My knowledge on the NBA is about as shallow of any sport that I'm gonna have. I've got some history, obviously, just because I'm deceptively old, but I'm not as deep on my knowledge, but this guy hasn't played in the NBA since 2020. Is that correct?
Yep.
So this is basically, so is this the equivalent of like a Cam Newton giving some opinion?
Similar.
Pretty much. That's about right.
Yeah. Then I just don't understand why he has. I mean, did this guy win awards? He was named the NBA Sixth Man three times.
Yeah, he was
never voted to an all-star team, but he was voted the sixth man three times. That's what they're saying. And he's definitely not the greatest sixth man of all time. My NBA knowledge is deep enough to know that is not true. So I don't know what this former player is griping about.
He says players shouldn't have to risk themselves and their livelihood to say, I need to meet a quota to be eligible for this stuff. Here's my thing. You play a kid's game for a king's ransom.
Yeah.
If you feel that you're risking your livelihood by doing what you get paid to do, then it should be like that all across the board. I should be able to go on my job. You guys should be able to go on your job. Like, look, I only need to work 2 days a week because I should not have to risk my health and my livelihood coming in here and dealing with y'all to do with all this stuff. So pay me my normal salary, but I'm only going to work 2 days a week and walk out.
I'm just going to say this. This guy's younger than me. 124 million career earnings. Go be happy. Just go be happy.
It seems these players don't have a genuine love for the game anymore. And like Ross said, we were talking about Anthony Rendon. And I'll say this about any NBA player that's griping about playing 65 games. If you're well enough to play 65 games, great. If you're injured, you don't have to worry about it. Because that's out of your control. You have to sit out. You got to recoup. But if you don't love the game enough to play 65 games plus, and you're healthy.
And I'm always going to say,
million people that'll switch places with you that'll play the 82 games and earn the money that you earn.
I'm always going to side with the fans. And there's some kid sitting in the 300 level who paid, you know, whatever money to go see that game, or his dad took him to see that game because he wants to see that guy playing. And he's just taking off just because, you know, I want to risk my livelihood. Come on, bro. Could you imagine a football? Could you imagine a hockey player saying, I don't want to risk my livelihood?
No.
Could you imagine a football player saying that? I can't even imagine. I'll say 85% of baseball players, because there's a couple of baseball players I don't know about. But I'll say about 85% of baseball players. You're playing basketball, man. I get that it's competitive and it's the elite level, and I have the utmost respect for what these people do. But, you know, if you're the sixth man, that tells me you're not a starter.
Right. Well, that's what Kobe had said. He goes, that's why I played every night, because there was some family that spent a bunch of money to come to an NBA game to see me. That's why
doing I played it right. every night. Do it for the fans, man. Like, they pay your salary. I get that. People don't live in this reality world when you're in that little bubble. Right. And it's whatever that ownership, you know, and that front office does to create. But I mean, at the end of the day, if I were a pro athlete, which, you know, obviously I'm not, I would obviously, you know, think about the fans, and I have the utmost respect for those players that really do it right for the fans. And living in Jacksonville, small market, I see players out in the wild all the damn time. I see players like shopping in Toys R Us with their kids. And you know what I do? I acknowledge them and I recognize they're with their kids. Good to see you. Let them have their friggin' time alone. They don't need some fan in their damn face. So
agreed.
I think that that's a two-way street with the respect for the fans. And when you've got a good relationship between the players and the fans, it's only a great thing. But anyway.
You're right.
I'll say this. This shouldn't be an argument. You get paid to do something. And if I could, even sitting here 42 years old, I have, the last 2 weeks, work has beat me down. After we finish this and it's all processed, I'm taking a shower and I'm going to climb in the bed. Like, work has beat me down.
I hear you.
I'm with you, man.
I can't say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to risk my livelihood by doing this. I signed up to do something. I'm going to call my manager tomorrow and be like, look, man, I appreciate everything you do, but I don't want to risk my livelihood to be out here. So I'm going to take off today. And, you know, I might be back like maybe next Thursday or something. It was a young lady. She's a big Steph Curry fan. And I think her dad paid like $1,700 to sit like almost directly behind the Warriors bench, maybe like in the corner. So she had her sign made and everything. The night she came to the game, Steph Curry didn't play. He decided to sit out that night. And she was inconsolable. She's like, I came here to see Steph. And I don't even think he was at the game.
Oh.
So it was just like, okay. Tonight, Boston and the Lakers play. AD and LeBron are sitting out tonight.
They beat Boston.
They're on the East Coast, so they should. Okay, how bad are they beating? Yeah.
Let me see. It was 60-46 at half.
Hmm. Okay, maybe they didn't even put on the AD. Oh man. Now, you got players from, I like to say, our generation, where the game was more for us. You have guys like John Stockton, Karl Malone, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, where they played no less than 79 games a season.
And played
You might have, I remember one of my cousins told me, he said, man, you think Jordan was really hurt when they said, oh, you know, he had wrist tightness, so he had to sit out. He's like, no, that was a rest day. He said they were few and far between, but that was a rest day.
Yeah.
Okay. You had, you know, your big men, if you had a dominant big man like a Patrick Ewing or Hakeem Olajuwon, and they were playing somebody like the Clippers, but they don't have a big man, so they don't really need to play. You know, you can rest them. I get that. Right. But you got guys sitting out multiple games. Yep. And you're like, okay, well, to quote the Midnight Rider, what are we doing here?
What are we doing here?
Ah.
Well, you remember Larry Bird laying on the court. Larry Bird couldn't sit on the bench. He would lay on the court.
Yes.
And stretch his back. It was a totally different game than it is now. The game's not physical. Even though they every time you watch LeBron play, it's like he's getting killed when he gets hacked. So the game's nowhere near as physical as it used to be.
Not at all. And, you know, you bring up Bird, two things. Bird had the bad back. He had bone spurs in his feet. He said they wanted to detach his Achilles tendon to take the bone spurs out. He was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. And he just kind of let it go. And just like, you know, I'll retire first. But he still played.
Mm-hmm.
But
go to, we come sport, to that point. Ronnie Lott.
Oh,
cut yeah, I was thinking it to play. I was thinking it.
Yeah.
That's gangster.
Yeah.
I'm just going to cut the tip off. I don't need it. Jeez. Yeah. Ouch.
I don't use it for nothing. Yeah.
All right. We come to the wrap it up part of the show. I had a question, and I want to do this because I got you gentlemen here, and I know for a fact we're kind of sort of on the same page when I say this. I did something. Now, Ross, I know you've been a Bullets fan since the 70s, and yeah. I know you in this area, you've seen a lot of basketball.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say this, and Duval Paul, I need your opinion on this too. If Len Bias had lived, and he played in '87, would the Lakers have beaten the Celtics in '87?
No.
See.
No. No, that team would have been unstoppable for as long as they were together. He was as good as Michael Jordan. He may not have had the flashy dunks coming from the foul line, but he was so strong, and he was just a freak of nature. They wouldn't have beat him. Mm-mm. That broke my heart. I'm a Tar Heels fan. I grew up a Tar Heels fan. I love Lenny Bias. I was changing a tire on a Ford F-150 because that was my first job. I'm taking a tire off the rim, and it came on the radio, and I was stunned. I just sat there. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah. It was definitely one of those moments, like you remember where you were when you heard. But yeah, he was definitely an elite player in his prime. Unfortunately, you know, what happened. It's tough to go back. You know, you're talking about those great players. It started making me think of Earl Manigault, the GOAT, if you know that guy.
Mm-hmm.
They made a movie about him. What the hell was that movie called?
Oh man, Rebound? It was
Rebound. Was that
yeah,
it?
Yeah, with Don Cheadle. Yeah.
I'll watch any damn thing with Don Cheadle. Don Cheadle's a fucking Don Cheadle's a fucking legend. Rebound. Go watch that. And you were talking earlier, we were talking about the fans, and I don't know if you guys saw it, but I'll throw another plug out there if you got Netflix. If you haven't seen it, you absolutely should see it. The Battered Bastards of Baseball. You guys familiar with this one?
Mm-mm.
It is a true story. I had no idea. I'll try to wrap it up. Minor league baseball in Portland. They sold the rights to like Tacoma or some shit. So Portland all of a sudden had a minor league team and then they didn't. And this is still, you know, an era where Major League Baseball pretty much ran everything. But this guy, Bing Russell, if you know Bing Russell, he was an old Hollywood actor. He was on Bonanza. He also is Kurt Russell's dad. So he he grew up in Florida where the New York Yankees used to play spring training. Then he ended up getting in with like the old, like the true Yankee legends, like DiMaggio and, you know, Lefty Gomez and shit like that. And he was like a Hollywood actor, but he, you know, before that he was a minor league player. He was the first guy to do like baseball drill movies and stuff like that. And he went to Hollywood when his career ended. He decided to buy the franchise rights to the minor league team in Portland. And even people in Portland are like, who the hell is this guy? What are they even going to do? How are they going to field the team? And he literally like sent a call out for players. And his son, Kurt Russell, was a minor league player. And like they were, you know, trying to, you know, drum up, you know, figured they'd get 50 guys that would come out. They put the call out. They got like hundreds of guys, people who like came from all across the country. And they fielded this team that was like this ragtag last, you know, it's like a legendary movie. I don't even want to spoil it, but just go watch it. It's incredible. It's called The Battered Bastards of Baseball. It's on Netflix. Feel good documentary. I recommend it highly.
Cool. I mean, watch that this weekend.
Yeah, because we got no football this weekend, so going to need something to watch. Because, you know, I was going to go with the standard for the weekend. I was going to watch Goodfellas at least 4 or 5 times.
Oh, so. Goodfellas and Tombstone. Those are my two movies.
Yeah. So, see, that's all you need. Just that and a bag of Cheetos, and I'm straight. Maybe a cup of tea. I'm all right. The Midnight Rider said 4-2 Lakers, and I've been trying to explain to him since I met this dude that would not happen. You have nobody on the Lakers that was going to stop Bird, DJ, the Chief, McHale on the block, man. And you got Bias probably coming off the bench. You're not. Yep. Sorry. Stop it.
And hang on. Was that still Red Auerbach too?
Yeah.
Well, he was up in the office.
He was in the office. He was in the office. Who was Casey Jones wasn't coaching.
McHale?
No, he was playing.
Who was it? I think it was it Casey.
I'm thinking it might have been Casey Jones. It wasn't Chris Ford, was it?
No, not yet.
No,
it was Casey Jones.
Okay,
that was Casey. And you know, Chris Ford was the one that Dominique Wilkins couldn't stand Chris Ford.
Yep.
Whew. But gentlemen, we got to get out of here. Don't want to get no overrun. Don't want to get no fines. The Midnight Rider confirmed. Yeah, that's Casey Jones. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining.
Thank you
tonight. Oh man, the conversation always great. And I had to keep looking at the time because I know if we ain't had to get up in the morning, we all don't need to go to bed. We probably could do this till about 4 in the morning. So
absolutely. Yep.
And the Midnight Rider said he was being nice saying 4-2, but I say 4-1 Celtics, but that's just me. So for the Midnight Rider in the comments, I know he was supposed to make it tonight. I guess work held him up. It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah.
We'll be back Saturday for the Saturday night WrestleManiacs, then Sunday, geez, I don't know. Maybe we'll watch the grass grow. We'll talk about some golf or something. We'll find something. I think we got some NASCAR starting up. Spring training is coming up in, what, I think 12 days, 13 days?
Yeah. Yeah, pitchers and catchers report. Yeah.
So we'll have that and talk about some moves on the base.
I got nothing for you.
Look, I ain't got nothing either. So I had to talk to the boss BJ about NASCAR. He could fill us in on NASCAR.
Okay.
Because that's his thing.
I can just jump on with Matty Ice. We could talk. We can have a whole hockey segment. That's still hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he said something about Calgary making a trade today. They pushed all their chips to the table and let one of their big boys go.
Yeah. They're going to need to make a move. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm just trying not to. I'm trying not to blink because my team is doing all right. But we got to see how things transition to the playoffs when things get real.
Caps are struggling. They are struggling. The team is old, and you know, the team is old. Ovechkin looks really old. Like, he's hurt. Obviously, he got hurt. But before he got hurt, I don't know if he got hurt in like preseason, but he's just not moving. He wasn't moving, and he wasn't hitting anybody. At least he would hit people, and he's not moving. So I don't know if he was hurt in the preseason. I know he got hurt during the season, but he just doesn't look like the same dude.
Yeah. Nothing gold can stand.
All the time undefeated.
Yep.
Well, gentlemen, for Duval, Paul, for Thanos, I'm the big guy, KG. We don't do no overtime. Thanos, snap us on up out of here.
Peace.